to me, I be work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. There's something about that work, 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 work. When you walk a line, 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 line. I'm in the cafe, my tar, 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 tar. Drive me, I desert you. No time to have you lurking. You make a walk, now you don't like it. You know I dealt with you the nicest. Nobody touched me in the righteous. Nobody text me in a crisis. I believed all of your dreams are duration. You took my heart, all my keys, and my patience. You took my heart, I'ma sleep a decoration. You mistaken my love, I brought for you for foundation. All that I wanted from you was to give me something that I never had. Something that you never seen. Something that you never been. Mm-hmm. But I wake up and hell and nothing's wrong. Just get ready for work, work, work. You tell me I be work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. There's something about that work, 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 work. Na, 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 na. When you walk out, na, 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 na. Before the table turn, 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 turn. Beg you something, please. Baby, don't you leave. Don't leave me stuck here in the streets, If I get another chance to, I will never, no, never neglect you. Against you, I just hope that it gets to you. I hope that you see this through. I hope that you see this true. What can I say? Please recognize I'm trying, baby. I feel why, 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 why. It's me, I feel why, 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 why. You see me do my da 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 da. So me by that why, 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 why. When you walk out, la 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 la. When the cat from my ta 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 ta.
Yeah. To get done, 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 done at work, come over. We just need to slow the motion. Don't get out of the way to no one. Long distance, I need you. When I see potential, I just gotta see it through. If you had a twin, I would still choose you. I don't wanna rush into it if it's too soon. But I know you need to get done, 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 done if you come over. Sorry if I'm way less friendly. I got niggas tryna end me, oh, yeah. I spilled all my emotions tonight, I'm sorry. Rolling, 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 rolling. How many more shots until you're rolling? We just need a face-to-face. You could pick the time and the place. You spend some time away. Now you need to forward and give me all the work, 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 work.
It's in me, I feel work, 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 work. You see me do my da 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 da. Something about that wah, 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 wah. When you walk out, la 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 la. I'm in the car from my tur 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 tur.
You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Free Farm Radio. This is Academics on Air with me, Jenna.
And me, Marissa. It's great to be on for our first show of the semester. So Academics on Air is a show concept that is circled surrounding the idea of kind of open sourced education and bringing Tufts students on air as guests once per week. And our show time is Sundays, 3 to 4 p.m. and having them read an excerpt of something that they found exciting from a Tufts classroom. So today we have guest Celeste on air, and we're going to be shaping our show around a theme of work and labor and feminist thinking. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited to see this show take shape and have different forms of guests come in every week. So we would like to start out by saying, if you're listening, if you're a Tufts student, please contact us, call in, or we'll maybe set up a Gmail for this show later on, and let us know what you're passionate about or what you read recently in a course that is in line with your major, is very separate from what you study, anything, and then come in and share that on the radio waves at WMFO.
Yeah, it could be a piece that interested you, a piece that maybe infuriated you, a piece that kind of just piqued your interest, or, you know, you thought, made you think differently. We're open to all types of literature and works, and we want to hear from you. So we're gonna play some more tunes, and then we're gonna have our interview with Celeste, who will be reading Wages Against Housework. So stay tuned.
Taking it. Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed those songs. That was 9 to 5 from Dolly Parton. And before that, we had Dirty Work by Steely Dan and Work by Rihanna. So a clear theme is coming out here. And we are so excited about our guest, Celeste, in studio with us. Celeste, could you introduce yourself?
Hi. I was invited to be present with great company. So I'm really happy to be here. What should I say about myself?
Maybe a little context as to how, maybe, so your major, but also like what class you're reading this for, why the reading is relevant to the class, and why you chose to read it with us today.
Mm-hmm. So this reading is from a class that I took last semester, but I've also had it in multiple other classes. And the class that I took in the fall was called The End of Work. I've actually talked about it on the radio before, but it's...
Can look back at the archives for more info
if you're interested. But it's about, I guess, how work has come to be like the center of our society and how we've oriented our values as a society around work, and like making people work more and work harder. And so like, how do we think about a society that isn't that? So the piece, I don't know how much I should say about it. I'm trying to be cagey about it. I think it stuck with me when I first read it because of how it approached the idea of domestic work and work that is mostly like done by women in the household that isn't recognized as work, but is also like just as demanding in really different ways.
Okay.
And I just want to add, I have read this for a class as well. I read it for Global Feminisms, which was an anthro class. And you said you've read it for two different classes.
Correct? Yeah.
So definitely a big part of...
anthropological thought. And
yes. Yeah. I mean, it's also like from like Marxist feminist mm-hmm. history, I guess. Yeah.
Okay, let's go into a reading of
we're going to read. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went over it, and it's hard to find, like, passages that really summarize this. So this is one that I think has some of the key points. I guess I should say what it is. This is Wages Against Housework by Silvia Federici. So an excerpt. This fraud that goes under the name of love and marriage affects all of us, even if we are not married, because once housework was totally naturalized and sexualized, once it became a feminine attribute, all of us as females are characterized by it. If it is natural to do certain things, then all women are expected to do them and even like doing them. Even those women who, due to their social position, could escape some of that work or most of it. We might not serve one man, but we are all in a servant relation with respect to the whole male world. This is why to be called a female is such a put-down, such a degrading thing. To ask for wages for housework will by itself undermine the expectations society has of us, since these expectations, the essence of our socialization, are all functional to our wageless condition in the home. In this sense, it is absurd to compare the struggle of women for wages to the struggle of male workers in the factory for more wages. The waged worker is struggling for more wages, challenges his social role, but remains within it. When we struggle for wages, we struggle unambiguously and directly against our social role. In the same way, there is a qualitative difference between the struggles of the waged worker and the struggles of the slave for a wage against that slavery. I'm going to skip ahead. We struggle to break capital's plan for women, which is an essential moment of that planned division of labor and social power within the working class. Wages for housework, then, is a revolutionary demand, not because by itself it destroys capital, but because it attacks capital and forces it to restructure social relations in terms more favorable to us. To demand wages for housework does not mean to say that if we are paid, we will continue to do it. It means precisely the opposite. To say that we want money for housework is the first step towards refusing to do it, because the demand for a wage makes our work visible, which is the most indispensable condition to begin to struggle against it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for reading that excerpt for us. I think we're going to play a quick song and then we're going to kind of debrief and discuss. So stay tuned for the discussion portion. Welcome back. That was Respect by Aretha Franklin. All right, so now we're going to debrief a little bit. Does anyone have any, I guess, thoughts that they wanted to start off with?
Is there anything that you want to say after having read that, Celeste?
Definitely feels weirder to read it out loud. I don't know. What were your first impressions? Are you hearing this for the
first
time?
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard that. And honestly, I guess what my first thought was, I think I learned it in one of my econ classes, was that, like, or maybe it was a psych class, but it's like, so if you want, like, there's like this story about this, like, these kids who were doing something that was really, like, upsetting, like, this man. I think they were, like, throwing rocks at him. And he was like, hey, stop doing that. But they wouldn't do it because, you know, it's fun to, like, do something that other people didn't like. But then he started to pay them to do that. And then all of a sudden, they kind of became, like, disincentivized because it wasn't fun anymore. It's like they were doing it for work. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, that kind of, I'm not sure exactly what my connection to the piece is with that, but that's just what I thought in terms of, like, you know, when we do things, not necessarily just for fun, but, not for pay versus, like, how it changes for when we would do them, you know, for monetary gains and such. And, like, how we feel about, you know, doing things in each situation.
Yeah. I was thinking about that as it relates to visibility, and I know that there was a part at the end of this excerpt you read, Celeste, that was talking about how this idea that might seem radical about, you know, money as it would be for any other job, a salary or wages for housework, is just even if that seems radical, that's just the first step to get visibility, like, for this type of work, or, you know, calling for that is a type of visibility for domestic labor.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious, and if you don't know the answer to this, that's fine. But just like, what do you know, like what the response was, I guess, in maybe the academic community and the general community to this piece? Like, were people like, yeah, this is totally something, you know, we should kind of, I guess, incorporate more? Or were people, or is there a lot of pushback? Like, whoa, this is too far.
So the context of this is that this was like the 1970s. There was a movement called Wages for Housework, and it was happening like mostly in Europe and in Italy, especially, where Federici was writing and theorizing. And I think this piece was part of that for her, like explaining why are people calling for this, like why is there this campaign happening. In terms of reactions, I don't know specifically. I know that there was a pushback in the sense of people being like, but why do we want to monetize yet another thing? But I think that isn't really the point that she's trying to make. I think the point that she is trying to make is about visibility, that if you have money, that you have the wage relation, as you were saying in your example, like with the kids, like now there's a relationship of wage that's happening. And once you have that wage relation, it makes it possible to be like, well, no, I'm not going to do it. Whereas, like in the beginning of that excerpt, she was talking about the name of, or like calling it love and calling it marriage, and like putting labor under that disguise makes it really easy to force someone to do it or oblige someone to do it. But I don't know specifically about pushback.
I don't know. Do we want to save this announcement for later? But just that, Marissa, if you want to.
I want to save the full announcement for later.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
But we can give a little hint.
A little hint.
Well, to make our listeners, you know, keep listening, the author of this piece is indeed coming to Tufts, and it's this week, but I'll give you the details later.
So stay tuned if you want to find out the where and the when.
So one other thing I was going to ask you, Celeste, or just, you know, pose the question, not directly at you, is I know I was looking over this piece again this morning and found a part where she is saying, you know, this isn't just the struggle of women or the struggle of certain feminists, but it is or will become a struggle of the entire working class. And that, so I'm curious where, especially in your end of work anthropology course, Celeste, where Federici's theorization fit in just like labor movements in general.
Yeah.
Not just women's labor movements.
Yeah. I am thinking about like why specifically, like, so this was written in the 1970s, but women are still doing housework, you know? But there's also this increased kind of like outsourcing of labor. So like you have middle class women who can like pay someone to take care of their children or cook for them. And there's, you know, it's the person who ends up in that position is always ends up being someone different. Does that make sense? So like you can always like pass off the worst work to someone else and the lowest paying jobs to someone else.
So service work and like working class people are all related to women's work in that way?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know, does that make sense?
Kind of. I had something, but I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. We did read another piece called Surrogate Humanity, which is about how the person who occupies that position of being a working class, or like that position of bad work, is treated or like characterized as inhuman in different ways. You're both just staring at me. So the example that the piece brought out, that piece Surrogate Humanity by Vora and Atanas Soski, talks about Alfred, which is this new like errand running service where they like hire people to come and run errands.
New as in like past couple years new?
I would imagine so.
Okay.
So it's like,
so the last article is 19, or the article of focus right now is 1970s, but the article you're talking about now is
pretty recent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to put some context.
That is a good point, that it's like recent, and also talking about a similar concept of like like personal labor, I guess, I don't know. Like the term for it is reproductive labor, which is like what is the labor that is needed to like reproduce society in terms of like, you know, the clothes I am wearing, the food I am eating, like how am I reproducing myself every day?
I don't know if I've critically thought of that term, reproductive labor, in that context, but what it immediately makes me think of is Donna Haraway, another anthropological writer.
Are we going there?
We are going there because she does a lot of thinking about, instead of procreating or reproduce it, like producing something new, whether it be physical items, human beings, like things, you know, anything that you are procreating, this idea of really recreating or composting or like working labor in a different way that's not just like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, makes me think of that.
I was thinking back to that. What was the app called? Alfred?
Oh, yeah.
So I was just thinking, there are so many apps nowadays to kind of, I guess, remove ourselves from tasks like that. I mean, I forget the name of it, but there's an app, you know, to have someone go do your grocery shopping for you and to have someone, oh, like, I can't build this IKEA set by myself, so I'm gonna, you know, post and have someone else come and do that for me. So just kind of like, I guess, little forms of labor that we kind of we find ways to delegate to other people using technology and other sources.
Yeah.
The word delegate is, I think that's a good word for this situation. And I think that in the case of Alfred also, like, the way that you're supposed, the people who are running your errands for you, they're not supposed to be like visible to you.
It's really like, it's like you request something and then it shows up, but you don't worry about how it gets there and the intermediary process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which then like removes that like awkward kind of class difference thing where you're like, oh, this person is like cleaning my house and I have to interact with them. And then you don't have to worry about that now. You can be like a good person and still hire someone to do your work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I happen to have recently been in a situation where someone Googled just the definition of the word errand. We had a disagreement about this. And errand means, as you would think, like, you know, doing a small task. And it specifically said in the definition, especially on behalf of someone else. And I have often thought of, like, you know, I can run my own errands, I can be doing things like that. But the fact that within that word and within these, like, errand services that are popping up, or apps like you're talking about, the fact that it is often seen as labor that someone is doing for someone else who doesn't want to do those potentially like more menial, unpleasant tasks to do is an interesting component of it.
Yeah. Have you guys used any such services or apps?
I have not.
I have not as well, but I'm even thinking about like food delivery apps.
Yeah, I mean, if you count that, then I definitely have, but I mean, I don't know. I don't have a car to transport me. It still falls under that umbrella, but I feel like it's like I'd still feel fine going grocery shopping for myself.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm just trying to like categorize it as like, oh, I'm different because I don't have a car. I can't do it.
I don't think it's like wrong. Like you can't be, it's not like
maybe
as straightforward as being like, well, this is wrong because I'm using an app to like ask someone to do this for me because... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it does like create like a certain kind of economy that's like, I don't know anything about economics. I just said the word economy and it made me anxious.
I do study economics and I don't even like the economy part of it.
So. I took an Uber recently and I thought about the fact that no money changed hands and just the way in which apps make that possible and the way in which maybe that makes, like, if we're talking about wages and visibility, even though most wages wouldn't necessarily be a hand-to-hand money transaction, I don't know, the way that's changing how we think about labor, if you're not even pushing a button that says like pay now, it's just you call the Uber and it shows
up.
And if you don't add a tip later, it like nothing happens. Yeah. It just, the money disappears from your account and goes into theirs.
That's interesting. I mean, that makes me think conversely. Over winter break, I went to a drag show in my hometown. They have this, like, it's called Hamburger Mary's. It's like a restaurant chain where they do drag shows. I still think my hometown is a weird place to have drag shows because it's like family family town. But anyway, while you're there, you're supposed to give them like money. Yeah. Like, and to me that felt very, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but it felt different because like as they're going around, you know, doing their routine, lip syncing, putting on their show, you're supposed to, you know, hold out your hand with dollar bills, waiting for them to come, you know, take them. And mm-hmm. to me that felt, I don't know, to me it felt a little demeaning, but like, I don't know, like how, it just felt like a transactional relationship in a way. And I felt, I don't know, I compared it to, I've never been to a strip club, but it kind of felt like it could have been something similar to that. And I think that's just interesting to compare that with like an Uber and like, I don't know how you might feel riding in that, whether you just, you know, you press it, you get in, you get out, and, mm-hmm. that, and that's it.
And it almost feels like sanitized to me, or yeah. like that there's this like, not, yeah, that you're not, your relationship isn't physical in that like handing anything over. It's very like distanced and
yeah,
sanitized.
Yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was really fun, but it was just, it was a weird, I had never kind of like, mm-hmm. like it's different than being like at a cashier register, because that's like, I mean, that is your relationship to a person there, but to this felt different.
Yeah.
It felt uncomfortable.
That's really interesting. Do you feel like it kind of disrupted like the performance that was happening too?
Not on their part, no. I mean, I think it's a normalized part of their routine. I mean, that's how they make their money.
Yeah.
That's my assumption. I'd be curious to ask. Mm-hmm. I didn't. But to me, I don't know, I got like nervous every time they would come near my table, because it's like, okay, this is my turn to hold out my hand with some money. It was still fun. It was just that was like on the, yeah. in my mind, like every time they came around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really interesting. I feel like your like two experiences are really interesting. The two examples, I guess, that you brought out are really interesting to compare, because like they're both, they are kind of transactional by nature.
Just two very different types.
But they're very different. Like, and they're very different social spaces. And also, like, very different, like, power relations, I imagine. I don't know. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, should we...
Yeah, this seems like a good natural stopping point. So, we're going to play more tunes about money and work and all that jazz, so...
I'm sure we'll keep talking about these topics off air and maybe come back on with more discussion points. Who yeah. knows?
So, some hot takes.
Stay tuned.
Oh,
Okay, it is time for a public service announcement. So as promised, as we discussed earlier in the show, there is a very exciting and thematic event happening on this Tufts Medford Somerville campus this Tuesday. So Sylvia Federici, very well-known scholar, writer, and the author of Wages Against Housework that Celeste just read some excerpts of for us, is coming to Tufts Tuesday, the 12th of February at 5 p.m. The event is from 5 to 7 p.m. and it will be held in the ASEAN Auditorium. The Aishon Auditorium, the ASEAN Auditorium. There's a lot of controversy over how to say this. Okay. And so that, just so you know, that auditorium is in the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy in the Cabot Multicultural Center. A brief description of the event. So Sylvia Federici has published a new work called Reenchanting the World, Feminism and the Politics of the Commons. This book was just published in 2018. It is very current. And in fact, she's really shifting her scholarly work from the feminist labor theory that she was known for and that Celeste read towards an environmental theory. And I think that that is quite interesting. Myself, as an environmental studies and anthro major, I'm really interested to hear her take on environmental degradation and where we're at now in our world. So, Reenchanting the World, Feminism and the Politics of the Commons, by Sylvia Federici, Professor Emerita, Hofstra University. Sylvia Federici is a scholar, activist, and professor emerita at Hofstra University. She is one of the co-founders of the International Feminist Collective, the International Wages for Housework Campaign, and the Committee for Academic Freedom in Africa. Her works include Wages Against Housework, Caliban and the Witch, Revolution at Point Zero, and a number of other works. This most recent book, Feminism and the Politics of the Commons, or Reenchanting the World, builds on Federici's pathbreaking analyses of reproductive labor to develop a feminist politics of the commons that engages new forms of enclosure, debt, agriculture, land grabs, environmental justice, and building another world. The event is sponsored by the Department of Anthropology and many other offices on campus. And it's free and open to the public. So once again, this event will be this Tuesday, February 12th at 5 p.m. in the Cabot Center and the Aishon Auditorium. This has been a public service announcement from WMFO, Tufts Educational Radio. Okay. You are currently listening to Money by Pink Floyd. You have some of that, those change sounds in the background. Before that, we had Money, Money, Money from ABBA. And before that was She Works Hard for the Money by Donna Summer.
A great disco queen.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah. All very apt choices.
Yes, very thematic. So, Jenna, I heard you have something to say about this subject.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just thinking about money and the weird things people do for money. And over the past couple of years, well, since I've been in college, I've taken part in a lot of psychology studies for money. And I've not had a lot of, weird things, but I've done several like MRIs and stuff, which is a pretty kind of intensive process. So you go in there. Well, before that, they like pre-screen you. You can't have any like metal in your body. Otherwise, the MRI machine will like kill you or something. I don't know. So they pre-screen you for stuff like that. But then you go there and you pretty much get into like a medical like gown, and then you go into this, it's a giant magnet, and you're there for, they usually like at least an hour or two. And you're just doing, sometimes you're doing nothing, but sometimes you're doing activities. And I can't remember, I think it's an fMRI, well, it's an MRI. So they're looking at your brain, but sometimes it's like a functional MRI, which is like looking for activity, seeing like which areas light up for certain activities and stuff. And so, yeah, I've done that for several studies. I've also had EKGs, which is where they attach electrodes to your scalp for brain waves. I'm not getting all the technical terms correct, but you can look that up if you're really interested. But anyways, yeah, I think, I don't know, usually they pay pretty well. But it's always, yeah, it's, I think it's just an interesting experience. Like, a lot of the times, you know, you have to pay people to do psych studies because no one's going to want to volunteer their time and their energy to go do them for free. But I think, you know, a lot of the time, the research that we base, you know, I don't know, medicine and other important discoveries on is based on, you know, these people who we're paying to do these studies is how we come up with scientific discoveries. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Like how we get from here to there.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are just my thoughts about money and
weird things. And
later labor.
That is kind of also because it's like you're giving people like access to yourself for their research, and then.
Yeah, selling my body, but in a different way.
I've never done a psych study here, actually, because of the fact that I had an AP psych professor, teacher in high school, who made some comment about how when he was in college, like, you know, to pay the bills, he did a psych study that I think involved, like, isolation for a period of time.
Yeah,
and
dangerous.
That he said that it was a stressful experience, and he was like, oh, I don't recommend doing psych studies for money in college. So I never have, but really I think that they are much safer than he mentioned.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the more they pay you, the more invasive they can be, because obviously, you know, they're equating your time and stuff with money. So I've done one that I got paid $500 for, but that was very, like, intensive. Like, I had to come in several times during the week. And they had me hooked up to these things. I was actually, that's when they were, is a sleep study. So they were like tracking my brain waves while I was sleeping. So I was hooked up to like this like EKG thing. And I looked, they had to send me home from the place in like a taxi because they said like, you know, we've had people go home on the subway with this stuff before and people think they're like bombers because of what they have like strapped onto their chest. It looks like they're gonna like detonate to explode. So like that's, you know, I was taking a risk in terms of like if someone saw me, you know, I could be very embarrassed. So yeah, they compensate you, I think, depending on like what commitment level they're asking of you. One thing I found that's interesting though is for the vast majority of psych studies, the pool of participants is college students because they are a captive audience. And so like here, a lot of students, it's required for the introductory class and for like the experimental class, you have to participate in a certain number of studies as part of, you know, passing the course. So again, they have like a captive audience in that sense of people who fill a certain role, and you know, they, I know, are like stereotypical college students. So when that comes to psych, it's like overwhelmingly white and female, and such. So it's interesting how that then plays out into the results you get for certain studies and whatnot, and how they then generalize those.
Well, I've heard of people making a lot of money from stool samples.
I've never done that before, so I can't comment.
But I am thinking about how like your data is going to be limited by that. But anyway,
I'm not knowledgeable on this subject. But to bring it back around to reproductive labor, kind of, I know another thing that people can choose to sell are eggs. Like, women can choose to sell eggs. Yeah. And I think that that's a very, very, very invasive, dangerous process from what I understand. And so thinking about, you know, who would be choosing to, I'm sure there are many reasons, but thinking about who would be choosing to go into that type of labor exchange, or like that type of work.
Yeah, no, I've actually thought about that, not doing it, but just like in general, because you know, I think it's very not a big deal for men to do stuff like that, because, well, A, like sperm, you know, it's like a dime a dozen. It's like, it's not, you're not like,
yeah,
if you do that, it's not like, oh my god, I can't have children, or I might not be able to for a month or so. It's like, it's a very renewable resource, whereas with women, it's like, I don't know, this is a finite resource, and like, and I think the pay difference reflects that, but I think it's also much more of an invasive procedure, and I guess obviously more of a decision that needs thought in that sense.
I think that's like the question of like how certain like labor incurs. Labor itself is like costly for people, and is more costly for some people than for others, and so like it doesn't, it's just not like an equal kind of relationship of exchange.
Just to, you know, shout out the what is it called, wage disparity,
wage gap.
Of 70 cents, I think is what I've heard, to the dollar, women to men, in the US. And to put some humor on it, I saw a vending machine in Ginn Library at Tufts that had this sign that was like, oh, we accept dollar coins. And I was like, whoa, what a weird thing for a vending machine to accept, except the exact wording of it was, we accept presidential dollar coins. And I felt somehow like they were really
like ones with Sacagawea.
Yeah. So what about Sacagawea's dollar coin? Is that not worth as much to this vending machine? It was a humorous thought that went into my mind when I saw that and thought about
I thought that was going more towards like, oh, women only have to pay 70 cents where men have to pay a dollar for this candy.
I feel like people have done like bake sales where they're like, oh, like men have to pay like
price discrimination for this
brownie
thing,
and then women can only can pay like 70 cents. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Can I add something in? My mom just texted me, and my mom works with lactation and is a lactation consultant for new mothers.
Listening?
She is listening.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Lisa. And she said breast milk too. Breast milk can be donated to a milk bank or freely shared with other mothers, but it's a big issue. She said there was a big issue a few years ago when a for-profit milk bank recruited low-income women to sell their milk. And so, yeah, really thinking about the ways in which we sell our body and being beyond prostitution, but ways in which we're selling like our time to a psych study or our, like the products our body makes in different ways. Interesting.
It is.
So we are running out of time. I have been thrilled by this first inaugural edition of Academics on Air.
Woo!
We'll play some more music. We might spin a little vinyl just for the fun of it, because that's something I really enjoy here in studio. But I would like
So I'm thank you guys for tuning in. To all our listeners, we'll be back again next week, 3 p.m. Sunday. You're listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford, Tufts Free From Radio, and this is Academics on Air with Jenna and Marissa and our special guest this week, Celeste. Again, we want to do a call out if any Tufts students have read anything interesting for classes that they felt like, hey, I want to maybe share this with people or discuss it more. We'd be thrilled to have you on air. So feel free to reach out to either of us. We might set up an email account to make it more legit.
Just a fun story really quickly. When I was taking the SAT in high school, I thought it would be great to make up a new email address because I didn't want to get all of the college spam to my real email. So I wrote one down on the form while I was taking the test and then went home and tried to create it. And someone already had that Gmail address, so they got all of my college spam. But I just want to say that I'm going to go home and try to make academicsonair@gmail.com for anyone to tentative message us at, way. But that's not official yet, so don't call it.
So we'll let you know next week if that email is still available.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Celeste.
And thanks to our listeners as well. Again, next week, 3 p.m. Sunday, same time, same place.